Starting with this episode, Little Brother will publish semi-monthly rather than weekly. This is to provide me an opportunity to rest a bit between episodes and hopefully to bring you better content. Episodes will publish on the Saturday after the second and fourth Friday of each month. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 129 of Little Brother for the 13th of May, 2023. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Some of us have experienced an idea called single sign-on in our workplaces, in which logging on to your computer unlocks a wide variety of different ways that the computer can attest to websites and other applications that you are who you claim to be. It's pretty convenient when it's implemented correctly, and I've seen it in the workplace for somewhere around a decade across six different employers, sometimes done better than others. It doesn't work for all things, but for your typical user who doesn't want to know how the computer works and just wants it to get out of the way and let them do their job, they are a great benefit. I mention this because Google is now bringing this idea into general availability for the services that they offer and calling it passkeys. The goal is to set things up so that passwords cease to be the problem that they have traditionally been. Time will tell if it works as well as promised, but the idea of removing the password obligations from non-technical users who don't grasp the importance is a good step. Well, this is scummy. An investigation by the Belgian newspaper Dernier Heure has found that Uber appears to be charging different rates based on how charged your device battery is. You heard that right. When reporters from the paper carried out an experiment requesting service between the same two points, from a fully charged device and from a device that was down to 12% charged, the device with the lower battery level was consistently charged about 6% more for the ride. It is, of course, understood that the pricing for both Uber and Lyft has always been dynamic based on conditions, but this one seems a bit invasive and makes an assumption about how urgently the customer needs a ride. We are all at this point used to the traditional top-level domains, .com, .org, .net, .edu, and the country-based ones like .us, .ca, .uk, .fr, etc. There has, in recent years, been an expansion in the generic ones to include things like .biz, .xyz, .xxx, and so on. The news here is that eight new generic TLDs have been introduced. They are .dad, .esq, .prof, .phd, .nexus, .foo, .zip, and .mov. I'm honestly not sure how I feel about the last two looking like long entrenched filename extensions, but .com is also a valid filename extension, so whatever. Regardless, the domain namespace is getting some expansion, opening up room for more. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Punked Recently. We have got four this episode. I'm sorry to do this, but the first one is actually a bit of a yawner. Why? Because we've seen this movie before. Who might that be? If you guessed T-Mobile, you guessed right. Mind you, this one is tiny in comparison to the prior pwns of T-Mo. 836 affected customers. That's very slight when compared to the roughly 37 million impacted in January's breach. Maybe we should start calling this the T-Mo quarterly breach? The second pwn this week is Yellow Pages Canada. Do they still publish Yellow Pages up north? You know, I bet there's people listening to this podcast who have never, ever seen a phone book. Well, anyway, Yellow Pages Canada were whacked by the Black Basta ransomware gang. The gang made off with info on employees and customers of the publisher. Employee data included ID documents, social insurance numbers, that's equivalent to a social security number here in the US, and other data including sales and purchase agreements and numerous financial spreadsheets. I see no info on whether or not the publisher intends to pay the ransom, but I would assume not. The State University of New York, or SUNY, operates a nanotech complex at SUNY Polytech just at the edges of the UAlbany Uptown campus. Employees of the complex were notified by traditional mail, you know, paper, envelope, stamp, explaining what happened to the email system there and what the impacts to them might be. Officials have been very emphatic that no ransom is being paid to the attackers. The last one, however, is a serious black eye for the target. The target is InfoSec company Optimize. The threat actor who pulled this one off has made the exfiltrated data available by BitTorrent with a magnet link, posted it to 4chan. Optimize is specifically focused on so-called cyber risks, and it seems that they are maybe not adequately focused. It actually kind of reminds me of the pwn of the bombastically named Hacking Crew from maybe a decade ago. Since Twitter is on our mind this episode, I asked some questions at the last Albany 2600 meeting about how long Twitter has left. Here's how that went. Is Twitter going to die suddenly? Is it going to fade away like MySpace? Is it going to do something else? And are there any predictions as to when? Our first contestant tonight is Mister73. What do you got?
In my opinion, I think it's going to fade away probably by the end of this year. I think Elon Musk just keeps messing around with it too much.
Okay.
And people are kind of getting frustrated with it. You know, the whole blue check mark this, blue check mark that. Now it's not a blue check mark. And if it does exist, it's just going to end up being an echo chamber for a very niche group of people, I think.
You think it's becoming sort of the new Parler, perhaps?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah?
Yeah. In fact, I don't even have Twitter anymore. I got rid of mine, like, last year because I was just tired of it.
Next contestant we have is none other than the axe that slayed me. What's your thoughts on Twitter's survival chances here?
You know, I have the opposite opinion. I'm very cynical. People are addicted to being able to send some short, pithy thought out at the snap of their fingers. There are people who want to just read a 1 or 2 second thought, and there's nothing to really to replace that yet. And yes, Elon Musk is screwing around with it, but the fact is, it's not going to be enough to get rid of people. Okay, Facebook sucks wet, dripping ass. Okay, Facebook, it has always had a horrible interface, and yet people are still getting their grannies on with its horrible interface. People are still coming back to Facebook after zero customer service when they need it, when they get their accounts hijacked, no help for you. People are still on Facebook no matter how shitty and crappy and scandalous it gets. And it's going to be the same with Twitter. It's not going to die. People are just going to keep complaining about it.
Where is your chip for the Twitter death pool?
Based on the pattern of events, I'd say, of the last 12 months or so, in the grand scheme of things, it will be a relatively short to medium term death, but I don't think it'll be a single event. Over the course of a year, we'll see multiple individual policy pushes or perhaps progressive steps taken, gradually more and more extreme in terms of what is allowed on the platform and how they moderate that content. I can see a lot of folks just having a very low tolerance for certain types of opinions and certain types of rhetoric, mm-hmm. with varying degrees of justification.
Now, I could ask you when you think we're going to start to see this, but do you feel we already have started to see this?
I think the platform has already peaked in terms okay. of user base and yep. popularity and goodwill
yeah.
or rapport. You know, right. I certainly think the glory days of Twitter are behind us now. Mm-hmm. I think... You know, I suppose that would be the answer. I think it's already peaked. Yeah. However, if I had to put a point at what year or what portion of what year do I think we're just going to kind of see it fade out of the lexicon? We're in Q2 of 2023 now.
No, we got it.
I feel like probably around 2026, probably not here so much anymore. But... That's just my shooting from the hip guess.
Okay.
I think something that could totally brush everything I've said off the table is if a TikTok ban does actually happen. And because I think there's such... It takes up such a large slice of the pie right now that if TikTok were to be eliminated from the equation, all of that user activity... People aren't just going to stop using social media for X amount of time.
You think they're
going
to move from TikTok to Twitter or something like that?
Not with 100% follow through, okay. but proportionally.
Interesting.
You know, a certain portion will go to Twitter. A certain portion will laterally transition over to Instagram. Another portion will go over to YouTube Shorts.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised if you listen to a couple of more sort of social media focused podcasts. Mm. There is actually a general consensus between TikTokers that once you gain a large following and a consistent following on
right.
TikTok, your next move in many cases is to make the transition off the platform.
In order of appearances, those are the voices of Mister 73, The Axe That Slayed Me, and Littler Brother. I completely get the desire to go high-tech with, well, everything, really. Unfortunately, sometimes common sense goes out the window with it. Sometimes it works out okay. I was vocally skeptical, not of the introduction of touchscreens to smartphones, but to their usage to the exclusion of other controls. I say that as somebody who, in the early smartphone days, was rocking a BlackBerry. A model with a touchscreen, yes, but it still had a full QWERTY keyboard on it for tapping out messages. It was inevitable, though, that a day would come when that was no longer an option, so I eventually gave in and got a Samsung smartphone. It was a Galaxy 4 when that first came out, and I was actually stunned at how well it worked. But this is not always the case. Sometimes the introduction of things like this is what might be referred to as a bad idea. Cars come to mind. I've been looking for an old episode where I first talked about a feature that BMW had introduced, and they were calling it iDrive. I'm thinking that this was probably around episode 19 or so that I spoke about it, around September of 2001, when this show was a broadcast on the radio and not a podcast. And it involved taking a large number of the car's features and presenting all of them on a single control, a knob. Yeah, that's it. One knob on the center console. It had some haptic feedback that would change the feel of the knob depending on what function you were operating with it. But anyone who's ever had to dive through menu after menu after menu and got annoyed over the process to find the feature that they're looking for knows full well that they really don't want to be doing that at the time that they're trying to travel safely down the highway. I don't know if that feature survived. I really hope not. I can't honestly see it having gone more than one model year without substantial alterations, and to be blunt, I'm really surprised it made it into production. So that brings us to a more recent dumb idea, and I kind of alluded to this a minute ago, the touchscreen. Touchscreens are great on phones, tablets, suitably okay on laptop computers, maybe a little less so on desktops, but they have absolutely no business being in a car. For the reason why, let me talk briefly about what it's like driving my 2009 Honda, which does not have a touchscreen. Going down the highway, if I want to change the station on the radio, change the track or CD that I'm listening to, turn the heat up or down, change gears, turn the wipers on or off, or, well, basically anything at all, I can do any of those things without ever taking my eyes off the road. Why? Every control is in a very specific place. I can feel my way to it, find it, and operate it without looking. Now, granted, there is a learning curve. I've been driving this car for over a decade, and I know where all the things are, but let me point out the obvious thing about touchscreens. There are no touchscreens, none, that can be operated without looking, no matter how familiar you are with the vehicle or the device. They are a smooth pane of glass with no contours to follow. The locations of the buttons vary depending on what particular screen is up right now. To work a touchscreen, you have to look. You have no choice. In the driver's seat of a motor vehicle, this is an unbelievably unsafe and bad idea, which is exactly the reason why it is illegal to text while you are driving. Thankfully, at least according to a report from Slate, automakers are starting to get the clue and backpedal from this idea. And controls, real, individual, single-purpose controls, they're making a comeback. To be quite blunt, it can't happen soon enough. I got a message from Azrael with a correction. In episode 128, in my efforts to try to balance my views of Elon Musk, I mentioned that Starship got airborne without blowing anything up on the ground. Well, it turns out I was wrong. Azrael writes, quote, regarding episode 128, the rocket did blow up stuff on the ground due to Elon's direct intervention and insistence on not using flame diverters, amongst other things. This hasn't happened in the past because this is the first time they've launched from their own pad, end quote. Citations were included in the message, and he's absolutely right. This kind of reminds me of Steve Jobs' alleged reluctance to put arrow keys on the first generation Macintosh computers because they had a mouse and didn't need them. The difference is, someone, probably Woz, persuaded Jobs to change his mind. Anyway, I genuinely tried to give Elon the benefit of the doubt. I still think Starlink is pretty impressive. Tesla's kind of awesome in its own way. But maybe, just maybe, Elon is just a lucky idiot. I've warned pretty consistently about the fact that your phone is a snitch in your pocket, and that you should exercise caution that it doesn't reveal too much. Regardless of how you feel about Roe v. Wade and its overturn, we really cannot allow ourselves to ignore the fact that the overturn has laid this reality bare. In states that have opted to outlaw abortion, law enforcement are turning to these pocket snitches to collect evidence for prosecution, and it's like shooting fish in a barrel. The topic comes up right now because the Washington Post did an investigation to determine whether or not Google devices were continuing to track people as they may be coming or going near or into abortion clinics, and lo and behold, they are. However, even if they were filtering that content out, the fact remains that your device has a trace of you entering that space and probably reported it before any decision may or may not have been made at the server side to nix that data. For right now, for most people, doing most things most of the time, this isn't an issue. And that's what makes this so insidious. Carrying your phone is generally regarded as a safe activity. But what if the next thing to get legal attention is something that's important to you? Something that's legal now and not an issue. Do you have a pattern of going to a gun range? How about a gay bar? Were you near a protest? All of these are concerns when it comes to your phone reporting its location to Google or Apple or even third parties and having them track your movements. Sadly, I have no long-term solutions to offer, but for the time being, if you're going to do something controversial, for the love of all that is right and good in the world, you might want to leave your phone behind. Under the new production schedule, we can't really call this the fail of the week anymore, but I think it rolls off the tongue much nicer to say that I now present you with the inaugural edition of the Fails of the Fortnite. We have three this time round. Our first one is Twitter. One of my favorite blogs referred to this as the Twitter Blue Blues, as the meaning of the infamous blue check marks is becoming increasingly ambiguous. It seems that we are now at a point where they are essentially useless, as celebrities who have had their blue check marks returned to them free of charge no longer want them. It seems that they have become a symbol not of the real deal, but of an entity willing to pay $8. For our second fail, we find ourselves in the city that is the birthplace of hacker culture, home of two great universities, and of two brothers who used to talk about cars. That is, of course, Cambridge, Massachusetts. In Harvard Station, one of the stops on the MBTA's Red Line subway, a long-forgotten box fell off of the ceiling and struck a passenger on the platform. What was in the box? Was it a box of joy, or was it a box of deception? Well, as it turns out, it was a surveillance device. that is allegedly intended to sniff out biological agents. And it was installed in 2011 in a joint project between MIT Lincoln Laboratory and the Department of Homeland Security, and then forgotten. According to the MBTA, the boxes served no purpose since 2013 when the program ended. MBTA staff have been ordered to inspect all of the other stations in the system to look for similar hazards. Our final one is actually kind of predictable. I mean, there's always been this risk of something recorded setting off voice recognition systems. Like, for instance, in episode 91, when I said those magic words, "Okay, Google, hey Siri, Alexa, where's the nearest furry convention?" You probably deserve whatever just happened. However, in this case, Google is being fooled by the Pixies' song, "Where Is My Mind?" Some releases of which begin with the spoken word, "Stop." Evidently, that's enough to turn off an alarm on a Google device. So if you are using a Google device to wake to music, maybe make sure it doesn't play that song. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Thriller at Play, Azriel, Fungaboo, Julie Bernstein, Ed, Joe Cadillac, and Knight Rider 007 for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 130 will drop on May 27th. Stay safe and be well. Employee data included ID documents, social insurance numbers, When this show was just a broadcast and not a podcast. Let's do that again. Our Fail of the Week music, no, Fail of the Fortnite music, is Space Reggae by Zap. I'm gonna do that one over.
I'm giving you a lot of dead air to edit.